watching their leader, waiting for him to move.
Chapter 20.
It was fully dawn when the escaped slaves and the rambling Rosehip players made their way back to the hideout on the southern cliffs. Puffing and panting, they threw themselves down on the grass and lay in the cool morning breeze. Gouchy came later than the rest. She had been watching their backtrack, covering the cart marks and keeping a wary eye peeled for pursuers. The mouse sat with her back to the cart.
No beast following us. They must still be busy fighting among each other.
Balor flopped his long ears thoughtfully from side to side.
Maybe so, but they'll try and find us. I can't imagine old Bad Thingy letting half his slaves and us off that lightly. We'd be best posting a guard. I'll take first watch, me and this jolly-looking young mousy fella here. What's your name, sir?
They call me Juniper.
Righto, Juno, me old nipper. You and me are first guard.
Roanoke blew tenderly on her paws.
Ooh, that's better. This dashing out all night doesn't suit me any more. Not as young as I used to be. Caston, what are you up to this morning?
Well, there's lots of new mouths to feed, so I'm going to organise a forage party, see what we can find to swell our larder out a bit. I'll take some of our new companions when they've had a rest and a bite of breakfast.
Roanoke liked to keep her paw on the pulse of activities in camp. She sat down and began massaging her foot paws.
Good idea. Who's on cooking duties this morning?
Trefoil wiped wheat flour from her paws on a dock leaf.
It looks like it's me again. I did it yesterday, too. That Celine Dean was supposed to take her turn today. She's probably off fluttering her pretty eyelashes at the new arrivals and enchanting them all.
Oh, is she? Well, I'm not having any of that.
Roanoke stood up decisively.
There are no shirkers in this troop. Every beast pulls their weight. Where is she? Celine Dean? Celine Dean? It's no use hiding, missy. I want a word with you, m'lady.
Roanoke searched the camp several times before she began to get worried. No beast had seen the pretty squirrel maid. Balor left sentry duty a moment to call an assembly.
Attention, please. Has anyone seen Celandine?
Barkjohn held a healing poultice of herbs to his injured shoulder. The wound was not as serious as it had appeared the previous night. Feldo held his father's head upright as Brom fed him soup from a scallop shell.
Drink up, sir. This is made from green nettles and I don't know what. Supposed to help recovery.
The old squirrel licked his lips as he finished the soup.
It tastes very nice. What's going on over there? Some sort of meeting?
It's a young squirrel maid, one of the company. She's missing.
Barkjohn sat up a bit, resting his back against his son's paws. With his eyes half closed, he nodded slowly.
I remember now. Was she an extremely pretty creature?
Brawn put aside the empty shell.
Oh, yes. Do you recall her?
Indeed, I do. Though I was only half conscious. I remember seeing her face over the back of the cart as she pushed. I thought she was the nicest looking squirrel I'd ever seen. I must have dozed off a while, because when I woke she wasn't there any more. Perhaps she tripped and fell.
Aye.
Brome nodded, recalling the wild dash from Marshank.
We were going so fast that no beast would have noticed. She's either lost or captured by now.
Feldo laid his father down carefully.
If she's lost, I'll find her.
Barkjohn struggled to get up.
But what if she's captured, son?
Then I'll free her, or die trying.
Feldo's strong face radiated anger and hatred. He strode off, leaving Brome and Barkjohn gazing after him. The old squirrel shook his head.
Let him go, Brome. There is a great rage in my son against all that Marshank stands for. You were only there a short while. He has spent most of his life as a slave. I know how he feels.
Soon the news was all over the camp that Celine Dean was either lost or captured. Balor posted Buckler on guard with Juniper. He conferred with Roanoke a while. Then they both went to talk with Feldo. The squirrel was sitting by the fire. At his side lay a pile of short, heavy driftwood lances. He was hardening their points to needle sharpness by burning and rubbing them on a rock. Feldo was intent on his work, and he did not even bother to look up as the hare and badger approached.
What ho, tree jumper? Looks like you're arming yourself up to start a one-beast war there, what?
Feldo continued sharpening the short lances as he replied.
Whatever it takes. I've got scores to settle at Marshank.
Roanoke squatted alongside him.
Need any help, Feldo?
He pulled another lance from the fire and began grinding it to a point on the rock.
It's not your fight. I got your troop into this, and it's time I did a bit myself without endangering others.
Roanoke nodded understandingly, realizing Feldo was in no mood to be argued with. She watched him a while before picking up one of the lances and weighing it in her paw.
How far can you throw one of these things?
Feldo took the lance and stood up.
Far enough. My muscles are stronger than most after seasons working in Badrang's rock quarry.
He threw the lance from the cliff top. It sailed out over the beach a fair distance before burying itself point first in the sand.
Not bad at all.
Roanoke winked at the hare.
Balor and I can throw a short lance twice that distance.
I'd like to see you try.
Feldo laughed humorlessly. Balor sought around until he came up with a piece of driftwood, not quite as long as the lance as Feldo was making. Taking a knife, he cut a deep notch across one end of the wood, then hefted it and made several throwing motions. A few more adjustments to the wood with his knife, and Balor nodded with satisfaction.
That's about right, old chap. Pass me a javelin. Anyone'll do.
Feldo selected one of the short, heavy javelins and gave it to Balor. The hare laid the javelin flat along his piece of wood, point forward and the other end resting against the notch he had cut. With the weapon lying flat on the wood against the notch, he drew back his arm, took a short hop skip and flung out, holding onto the wood. The javelin soared away, passing Feldo's weapon on the beach, travelling onward and finally splashing down into the water on the tide line, almost out of sight. Feldo gasped as Balor gave him the piece of wood.
Here, old lad, you have it. Simple device, eh, what? Makes your throwing arm twice its length and gives you double the distance.
Feldo looked at the javelin launcher as Balor continued.
We've won many a supper at tribe gatherings in the south with one of those. There was always some big brawny beast wagered he could throw a javelin farther than me or Roanoke.
The badger offered a paw to Feldo.
Now do you want our help?
Feldo grasped the big paw, his eyes alight with resolve.
Let's go and see if they've got Celandine at Marshank.
Accusations flew thick and fast at Marshank, Clog and Badrang blaming the whole thing on one another in the wake of the confusion at the rear wall. While the remainder of the slaves were under heavy guard, the other corsairs and horde members gathered in the courtyard to witness the argument raging between their leaders. It was a fine show of rage, spleen and insults.
Ha! Lord Iron Mighty Badrang, is it? Can't hold on to half a passel of defenceless slave beasts. You're a lobster tail.
I'd sooner be anything but a complete idiot who lets the enemy into Marshank and has the gall to call them friends. You always did keep your brains in your clogged famine, you buffoon.
Buffoon yourself, you blown up pollywoggle. There was me and the crew nearly catching those creatures. And what did you do? Jumped off the wall onto our heads, you jellyfish.
Jellyfish? You're the one who started all this mess, Addlebrain.
Oh, is that so? Then who set fire to my ship? And who let the slaves escape? You've brought bad luck on both of us, Fiddlebrain.
Shut your mouth, you pigtailed poltroon, or I'll shut it for you.
Ha ha! Now you're flying your true colours, Jugnose. I'm not stopping round here to bandy words with the like of you. I'm off to do something useful. Grizzle, Boggs, form the crew up fully armed.
Hold hard there, wooden paws. Where do you think you're off to?
Well, clean out your mucky lugs and listen while I tell you. Those slaves that escaped last night is now free beasts. You got no jurisdiction over them anymore, Badrang, your lordship. So if any beast were to recapture them, then they belong to the finder, and that'll be me, if you please. Come on, lads. Away, boat's crew.
Badrang watched Clog and his crew march off through Marshank's front gates.
Shall we form the horde up and stop them, Lord?
Gurad whispered anxiously to the tyrant. Badrang gave the rat a withering glance.
Stop them? What for? Let me do the thinking, Gurad. If Clog recaptures the slaves, where's he going to take them? What's he going to feed them on? Where's he going to keep them penned up?
I don't know, Lord. Where?
Badrang tapped a paw against his skull.
That's why you're a horde beast and I'm a leader, Garrod. What else can Clog do but bring them back here? When he does, I'll take them from him. So what could be simpler than allowing Captain Tremon Clog to be our slave chaser?
Gurad sniggered gleefully, rubbing his paws together.
You're a clever one, sire. A real clever one.
Badrang buffed his claws on his fur and inspected them.
I could buy and sell an oaf like Clog any day. He'll soon find that out to his cost.
Celandine was lost. When she tripped and fell while running through the night with the cart, the young squirrel maid had cracked her head and passed out on the spot. dawn had broken a full hour before she came to. Celandine's first reaction was to sit and cry, and she did so. Sobbing and wailing broken-heartedly, she lay on the cliff-top, kicking her footpaws and nursing a bruised lump just below her ear, near her jawline. At regular intervals, she would stop and sniff, calling out the names of Balor, Roanoke, Buckler and Feldo. Hearing no reply, the pretty squirrel maid would throw herself back full-throated into a bout of copious bellowing and weeping. Why did no one come? There was always some beast round to dance attention when tears flowed down her beautiful face. It took quite a long time for Celandine to realise that she was totally alone. So she set about doing what she did best, preening herself and attending to her looks. She brushed, licked, dusted and primped, holding her head coyly on one side so that the curve of her bushy tail hid the unsightly bump she had suffered. Then she sat again and bemoaned her fate aloud to the bright morning air.
Oh, why doesn't some beast come for me? My head's aching and I must look a dreadful sight. Oh, I'm hungry and thirsty and dusty and dirty, and now I'm lost. Oh!
The weasel floater had been scouting ahead. He made his way back to where Clog was leading the crew.
No tracks of the cart happened to finish over yonder. Must have been some beast covering the trail.
Clog looked at the ground, chewing one of his beard plaits.
Covered, ye say? Bad fortune for us, matey. Look it, here comes old Crosstooth. Mayhap he has some news.
The fox pointed at a tangent to where the cart tracks had finished.
Found a set of paw prints going that way, Captain. But 'tis only one beast.
Clog spat the plat out and scratched his nose.
One beast is better than none, I always says, mate. Lead on.
They had not gone far when the sounds of Celandine's lamentations reached their ears. Tram and Clog signalled for silence. Bellying down, the corsairs breasted the low hill. They peered over at the weeping squirrel maid. Gruzzle shook his head sympathetically.
Ain't she pretty, Captain? It's enough to break your heart.
Clog chewed at the dandelion still attached to its stem.
Aye, 'tis sad, matey, and even sadder when I thinks of the way I'm going to make that little beauty wail when I tickle some information out of her with me cutlass point.
Celandine was still crying and talking aloud to herself.
Oh, why don't any of the troop come and find me? Oh, dear, I mustn't weep so much, or I'll look all ugly and puffy.
Oh, that ye will, my little weeping willow. Come on now, dry your eyes and give old Uncle Clog a big smile.
Celandine looked up in terror. Standing not 10 paces from her was the Corsair Stoat and his villainous crew. She choked out a small frightened whimper as Clog drew his cutlass and advanced on her, grinning wickedly.
Chapter 21
Martin and his friends were captured so quickly it made their heads whirl. One moment they were sleeping peacefully, and in a twinkling they were dragged up onto their footpaws. Tough vine ropes secured their paws tight, with nooses that locked around their necks. The dark, slithering shapes of lizards were everywhere, slinking around the tree trunks and writhing over each other, making no other sound than a sibilant hiss. With his paws pinioned to the sides of his head by the vine that encircled his neck, Martin struggled to get loose and reach his short sword, shouting to Rose and the others,
"Rose, are you all...
The big red frilled lizard pulled savagely on the vine, choking Martin into silence. The young mouse tugged either side of his neck, striving to loosen the vine so he could breathe properly. Then they were off at a headlong run, pulled along cruelly, with countless lizards flanking them and shoving them from behind. Splashing through marsh water, clutching through mud, crashing through nettles, they rushed through the night. Rose sobbed for breath. Tripping on a root, she fell flat in some ferns. The speeding reptiles did not stop or even slow. They continued their mad stampede, dragging her along, thumping and bumping across the soggy earth. How she fought her way back upright, Rose never knew, but she was certain she would have been dragged to her death had she not done so. Grum's short legs battered the earth as he was dragged and swept along in the midst of the lizard throng. Somewhere close, he could hear Palom's ragged gasps as his friend fought for air on the end of a strangling vine noose.